Under disse for vort fædreland så alvorlige forhold opfordrer jeg alle i byer på land til at bevare en fuldt ud korrekt og værdig optræden, der enhver uoverlagt handling eller ytring kan have de alvorligste følger. Gud bevarer dem alle. Gud bevarer Danmark. Christian Rex, Amalienborg, den 9. april 1940.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Foxhole Companion with me, Dan Stewart.
And me, Simon Rance.
The podcast that brings you the chronological history of the Second World War as seen through the silver screen. So what you heard there was the announcement on April 9th, 1940, from the Danish king, basically telling his people not to overreact.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't do anything rash. Yeah. Just, you know, just carry on as though and everything should be fine.
Yeah.
And then he ends with this rather chilling phrase where he says, God save us, God save Denmark. Which probably was probably appropriate when you're being invaded by the Third Reich.
I'd say so. So it brings us to a great movie, fantastic movie, which Dan,
we love this film.
Which Dan recommended, called April 9th, directed by Ronnie Ezra, who's essentially a TV director. He's also a writer and a producer. But the writer, Tobias Lindholm, is probably rather better known. He also wrote The Hunt and Hijacking. So this movie is, Dan's always saying, this one's a real war movie, or the next one's going to be a real war movie, instead of like more of a like a social political drama. It very much is a war movie. It's the invasion. It's the day of April 9th, the invasion from a minor piece of training to start with of a bicycle division, which I did not know existed. It's a very taut, tense movie. It's an hour and a half. There's no excess fat on this. This is lean prime beef.
Yeah. And a proper war movie.
There he goes again. The difference of opinion is that I want to cover pretty much every film, and Dan's a bit more sensible than that.
Yeah. Simon wants to do every film ever made. I think we should be a little more selective. So anyway, with this led us
I just don't want it. I don't want it to end, Dan. It's that simple. This is my life.
Yeah. Well, you know, we have got 5 years of war and, you know, 90 years of films to get through. So yeah, I think we might be doing this for some time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, as Simon said, it's a tall hour and a half long film based on a true story about a platoon of, believe it or not, a bicycle platoon in the Danish army who spends April 9th trying to stop the entire Wehrmacht from invading Denmark. And as you probably might suspect, it doesn't go very well. It's a great film. I don't know the director at all, Ronnie Ezra. But as Simon said, Tobias Lindholm, the writer, has done a few things. Now, there are some stars in this. Lars Mikkelsen, some of you who are fans of the Nordic noir, he was in Fribrydelsen, otherwise known as The Killing, and he was fabulous in that. He's also the brother of Mads Mikkelsen, who's even a bigger movie star.
Well, he is a movie star, isn't he?
He really is a movie star. But Lars Mikkelsen, I mean, this family's got some acting talent because he's just as good as his brother. And the lead, who is fabulous, who Simon
amazing.
And I saw, we described him as a physical cross between, who did we say? Who did
Ray
he
Liotta
look like that we
and
thought?
Michael Shannon.
Yeah, he's like a young Ray Liotta who had a baby with Michael Shannon. This
exactly.
would be their offspring.
Yeah, he is terrific. Such presence. Imagine being a director. He's a dream of an actor to have. You know, he's
well,
just wonderful.
And, And apparently that we're not alone in thinking that. Those of you who are Game of Thrones fans, those of you who follow me on Twitter know that I've barely watched half an episode, even though I auditioned for the role of the Mountain. And surprisingly, despite being 6'4" and 15 stone, didn't get it because it actually went to a real mountain. Yes, so those of you who are Game of Thrones fans, our lead, the sort of love child of Michael Shannon and...
Ray Liotta.
Pilo Asbeck was in Game of Thrones.
Oh. Yeah, I only got through the first season of that.
So he was in it says he was in it from 2016 to 2019, which is sort of most of the series, I think. Euron Greyjoy, for those of you who are Game of Throners.
Right.
Now we might have to watch him in another war film, Simon, because in 2018 he made the film Overlord, which seems to be a film about on D-Day, American airborne going behind the lines on D-Day, but discovering some kind of mutant zombie German army.
Oh, yeah, that's a J.J. Abrams movie.
Yeah, he's in that too.
Oh, is he? Okay.
Yeah, he's basically nonstop. And I think you'll probably be seeing quite a lot of him as an actor. He is so good.
Yeah, he is terrific.
But before we launch into this brilliant film, April 9th, I thought it would be a good idea if we gave you a little bit of history, a little bit of background into what was probably the shortest conflict in the entire Second World War, given that the actual conflict lasted about 6 hours on the morning of April 9th before the Danish government went handy hock and threw in the towel. Denmark had signed a non-aggression pact the year before in 1939 with Germany. And I suppose like Czechoslovakia and Poland and Russia and everyone else that they double-crossed,
yeah,
everyone assumed that Hitler would honour this peace treaty. Big mistake. No, because he didn't. I don't think he honoured anything.
No, honour's not a word you can really sort of put... put on the Third Reich's table.
No, there wasn't a huge amount of it. And I think a lot of the world, including Denmark, considered Denmark wasn't a strategic importance, really, in the big scheme of things. So I think the Danes probably felt they weren't really a target. But lo and behold, the Wehrmacht seemed to be amassing at their borders in the days leading up to April 9th. And then they invaded both by land and air and sea. And the Danish army is just basically no match for the entire Wehrmacht. And the Germans looked at Denmark as being a good jumping off point for their continuing war into Scandinavia and the invasion of Norway. Mm-hmm. So that was their thinking behind it. Originally, apparently, Hitler had sort of toyed with the idea of just basically going to Denmark and saying, look, we could invade you, but how about you just give us strategic airfields and we'll let you alone. But then he changed his mind and went, nah, let's invade. I think it caught everyone by surprise, which is very much the tone of this film that we're about to watch as well.
Oh, totally. That's exactly what you get from it. And you're with this platoon from start to finish. And, the film doesn't deviate away from them at all, does it?
No. And if you go onto Wikipedia and you look up the German invasion of Denmark, you'll see some photographs. And one of the first photographs you see is of this famous Danish bicycle infantry unit that the Danes seem to be very fond of. There were a lot of them, and that's the platoon that the film is based on. I don't know what the Danes thought they were going to do on bicycles, but there they were. They were completely outmanned, outgunned, out everything. And they did put up a little bit of a fight as best as they could with what they had.
Well, I mean, I imagine this is why they've made a movie out of it. It's to actually celebrate the bravery of these people in the face of, total the wrath of the Third Reich. They're knowing full well there is no chance of victory, just keeping them at bay. And
right,
you know, the film is a celebration of the bravery, isn't it? Very much so.
Well, exactly. The Wikipedia and is quick to point out that their very, very quick capitulation. I mean, 6 hours has got to be a record.
Yes.
When you look at what the Poles tried to do.
Yeah.
But it does point out that consequently there was a very lenient occupation, and that the Danes really didn't suffer very much under the hands of the Third Reich. Mm. The Germany sort of felt that these were their Aryan brothers and left them very much themselves. I mean, they sort of got rid of most of their military, but then generally sort of left them alone.
Is
and
that
it's very
right, really?
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
crikey, they didn't with the Norwegians.
Well, or the Dutch, for example.
No, but
you
I just mean Scandinavia, you know.
Oh,
but,
in terms of Scandinavia, no. So I think they sort of felt that these were their Aryan brothers and sisters, and that because they had given up so quickly, they were going to be lenient on them. And again, it was Denmark wasn't really of great strategic importance either to the Allies or to Germany, that everyone kind of left them alone.
Right.
But here's a very interesting thing. The Allies were furious with Denmark for having given up so quickly. They thought that they should have probably put up more of a fight. And it's alleged that a boxing commentator had said that they had basically capitulated without fighting, just like a Dane. Consequently, the Danes have adopted this phrase, like without fighting, like a Dane, and have a saying now, which goes something like Aldrig mere April 9th. I don't know what Danish for April 9th is, but it basically means April 9th, never again.
Okay.
Or never again an April 9th. I think it's sort of a national shame that they did give up quite so easily. But it's a tough one, isn't it? Because their country was left alone. I mean, the Prime Minister basically surrendered almost immediately. But in his defense, what he was trying to do was save Copenhagen from the bombing that they had seen happen to Warsaw, which pretty much got flattened.
Yeah, yeah. It is a tricky one, and it's easy to look back at a situation like that and go, oh my God, you just like opened the front door and like invited them in. It's, you know, what do you do in that situation where you literally, you know, compared to many other countries, have no armed forces, really? You know, you're talking very, very minor. It's almost like basically just having the TA on bikes. That's what they add. That's what it looks like, right, in this movie.
Well, I think you're doing the Danish army a bit of a disservice, because if it was the British TA, they're, you know, generally considered a bit of a joke.
Yeah, fair enough.
You know, it's Gareth from The Office, isn't it?
Yeah. But what I mean is, yeah, sorry, Denmark, please forgive me. What I mean is, it even says at the very beginning, massively unprepared Danish army being invaded by the German army. And, it, you know, it's like, wow, okay. You know full well there is no chance, you know, and they must have known that. And I think it's much braver in the face of what would have been a massacre to, you know, throw in the towel, so to speak, you know, and save your nation's lives. Because otherwise, you know, we see what the alternative is many times through the next, you know, up till 1944, 45. What happens when you don't throw in the towel? It's butchery.
Yeah. Well, certainly. I mean, if the Danes can be excused at all, if they had been watching the news in the last 4 months and seeing what happened to Poland, there's no country who weren't looking for it. The Danes weren't looking for a fight. They weren't looking to pick sides. But if you'd seen the just devastation that Poland had to endure at the hands of the Wehrmacht and then the Soviet armies, there's no way you'd wish that on your own people.
No, exactly.
But they did give up in 6 hours.
Okay, back to that.
Oh, they did. Well, I mean, So that's basically, you may ask yourselves, you know, why did Dan and Simon want to talk about a film based on a war that basically didn't happen? It was 6 hours long. And in fact, what history tells us is the prime minister had actually surrendered within 2 hours of the German invasion. It's just communication difficulties meant that a lot of the soldiers who were facing off against the Germans didn't get that information, so they carried on fighting.
And that's what happens to this platoon, isn't it?
One of the tragedies is that they actually do lose lives when the country had already surrendered. So to the film, mm-hmm. April 9th, we liked this film, didn't we, Simon?
Amazing movie made in, I think it's 2015, isn't it?
That's correct, 2015.
Yeah. We've said how great it is. It also looks and sounds amazing. The music score is wonderful. It's very, very understated, very modern, almost like a Mogwai sort of...
or a Vangelis sort of thing, isn't
it? But it's not as in your face as Vangelis, do you know what I mean? It's subtle.
Very, very subtle. Jonas Struck did the music.
He did the music to the Borg versus McEnroe movie.
Oh, right, there you are.
I'm not sure what else he's done, but yeah, it's terrific. Very, very, very strong. And it looks incredible, right? It looks...
Oh, yeah,
it's very neat. That's the best way to describe it. It's very neat without, and I don't mean that in the twee sense. I mean that in the best sense.
There isn't a huge amount of dialogue. The story sort of tells itself. And yet the writing is so good that you learn, you know, it's this typical thing that you've heard Simon and I talk about before, where you get to know a platoon of soldiers or a company of soldiers and you start to feel empathy for them and you want them to survive and you want them to live. And in the more generic war film, what you'll have is, you know, a soldier talking about their life back home or their sweetheart or their gal that they want to get back to and the job that they want, and you know they're going to get it.
Yeah.
With one exception, this film doesn't have any of that. And in fact, what's very interesting is that until the very end, when this platoon is really up against it, their commanding officer, the brilliant Pilo Aspek playing Second Lieutenant Sand, they all call each other by their numbers.
Yeah.
So they're like, 219, go over there. 222, follow him. And so you almost don't even learn their names. But we get to know them because as the film opens, we see these three soldiers sort of trudging along a road with their suitcases. And they're having a bit of a moan about the fact that they've been called back from leave, and they're having a bit of a gossip as to, you know, what it could possibly be about. And they end up in a field with the rest of their platoon who are all doing shooting practice. And they're sort of taking the piss out of one of their mates because he can't hit anything. The first thing you notice when we meet these soldiers is they are babies. I mean, they are really young.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like a Cub Scout mission. It's mental.
But I kind of really like that because a lot of war movies opt for getting in people we know, celebrities or whatnot. I mean, if you think about Saving Private Ryan, they don't look that young. I mean, maybe that's an American thing. I don't know.
Well, they're not, are they? That's why, you know.
They're not young.
It's like that movie. It's like the movie of the Memphis Belle. You know, you read about the... US, you know, the US Air Force and the kids they were sending up towards the end of the war. I mean, you're talking like 17-year-olds, right? It was absolutely crackers. But you watch a movie like that and everyone looks 24, you know. And in this, they look 16.
They really do look like they're babies. Now, the officers who are having a little, they've got a nice little table set up in this field with some brandy on it, and they're having a chat about, you know, rumors again, and it's very similar to the opening of Westerplatte, actually, in tone, in the fact that it has this sort of menacing suspense, this tension, where here's a country again, much like at the beginning of Westerplatte, who knows that the German army is basically at their border, and
wandering. The wolf is at the door.
And are they going to invade or are they not? Is it just another drill? They've obviously had a lot of drills, and they keep saying, well, it's always a drill. It never happens. We'll be fine. But you can see from the faces of these kids, and I love that they're kids. It's so great that they're kids, that they are a little nervous about this one. We watch them, and sort of it's a brilliant way to establish how completely unprepared the Danish army was. The platoon is put through, after doing their shooting, they're put through a rigorous drill in changing a flat tire on their bicycles.
And we were talking about when we had to do this as a kid, I was terrible at it. It was so bad.
Yeah, they're obviously quite good at it, given the fact they sort of depend on their bicycles, I suppose. But
they can do it in two minutes, right?
They can do it in 2 minutes, but Pilo Asbeck, Second Lieutenant Sand, is not happy, and he wants them to do it in a minute and a half, and the soldiers are miserable about that. They're like, we can't be done.
It can't be done. That's brilliant, that bit. Like this, you please don't ask the impossible of us. You know, we'll go up against like the Third Reich that's about to invade, you know, with our bikes, but a minute and a half to change a puncher.
Yeah, never going to happen. So, but it is touching in a way because, God, if we know anything from our first season of Foxhole Companion, is that the might of the German Wehrmacht was it was the largest, most sophisticated military in the world at this point. Yeah. I mean, the Russians were even struggling to keep up.
At that point.
And they generally just sort of, throughout the war, their tactics were mostly just, oh, we've lost 500,000 men. Send another 500,000. That'll be all right. That'll sort them out. But with the Danes, you definitely see that these kids are on bicycles and they've got rifles. Anyway, whilst they're sitting there having their lunch, a dispatch rider shows up who's in a panic and he says, everyone back to the barracks. The general asks that the soldiers rest but do not get out of combat gear, and everyone's to take rations and ammunition. To which they all sort of look at each other like,
And it's 40 rounds each, isn't it?
Yeah, they're lined up at night at the barracks and they're told you each get 40 rounds, and they look at each other like, what are we going to do with 40 rounds? And this is where the tension is great, Simon, because we know what's coming, but the dramatic irony of watching this platoon of bicyclists who are sort of writing last letters home and, you know, talking about what's coming, have no idea at all. And but you get the idea, they sort of understand they're no match for whatever is coming. Anyway, they get the alarm in the middle of the night, don't they? And they're all told to mount up a motorcycle platoon with some anti-tank guns on them.
Sorry, it's like that part made me crack up. And you've got a sort of close-up of the commanding officer and he shouts, prepare to mount! And they all just get on their bikes.
I know, and pedal off into the night.
Dear God, poor guys. Poor guys.
Anyway, we watch them cycle through the night and dawn breaks and they see the motorcycle soldiers who were sent out in advance to see what was going on. There is a very sad bit, isn't there? They keep calling. When they say the Germans are at the border, there is like a little guard hut with a sort of up and down arm, you know, those things.
Yeah, that looks like it's basically where you show your pass to get into the factory.
Yeah.
Not a country.
In a field with two fellas in it on a telephone, and they're like, we could see lots of Germans. And what we get that night is that the officers and the superior officers, and we have to assume the government, were basically saying, do not do a thing. The colonel in charge of this little merry band of cyclists begs that they be allowed to set off towards the border and points out that it's 10 kilometers away. And if the Germans do invade and we don't do anything until they do, it's going to take us a while to cycle there.
Wow.
But the government says, no, we mustn't do a thing
to antagonize. Because
if it is just a sort of, if they're just doing maneuvers and we set off an international incident, we can't be having that. So we hear this terrible, like, lamenting soldier, these two fellas who are in a guard post at the border going, there's a lot of them, what should we do? And then the line goes off and you go, oh dear.
Yeah.
That probably didn't end very well. So these poor bastards are cycling through the night. They meet the motorcyclists coming back who are basically legging it. They're like, right, we've had enough of that. We're out. You should come with us. And they say, no, we've got our orders. We're supposed to keep going and defend this town. And they say, no, the town's gone, pal. You've got to leave. And they hightail it. But these poor cyclists decide they will make a bit of a stand. And they take their positions on either side of this little lonely road. And sure enough, here come the Wehrmacht.
Yeah, it's like, ooh, we've got bikes. They've got, oh my God. It's like,
tanks.
Dear me. And you've got Anderson, who is the kind of, who is one of the three kids at the beginning who's strolling down the road with Bran. So Anderson's is kind of like the jock, if you imagine the jock of the group. You know, he's kind of like tough, bit macho. He's in charge of the light machine gun, right? And the light machine gun is the heaviest artillery they've got. Now let me just tell you how heavy that is. It clips onto a bike, so it's not taking out what appears to be like some kind of a cross between a transport and a tank, and the bullets are just bouncing off it. And the guy who's holding the tripod and putting the magazines into the light machine gun says to Anderson, they're just bouncing off, mate, you know? And he's like,
I know.
And he's like, well, he's like, you know, what do you want me to do? Do you know what I mean? Anyway, he keeps firing and he works out that if he aims into the... So he works out if he aims at the slots that the driver or the gunners see through, that if he takes them out, they stop generally. And he's quite a good shot. And he does manage to do that, I think, on only one occasion. And it's like, fall back. We've got, and they do. That's what they have to do. And that's what they have to keep doing until the end of this movie.
Yeah. They lose a soldier in this bit who gets taken out by a machine gun.
That's right.
The Germans are just all over them instantly. I mean, they take down a couple of Germans, but they're not going to win this little war.
No.
And
they do. The thing is, at that point, they take out quite a few Germans. And it's quite remarkable, really, how well they do at that point. Yes, they have to retreat, but that's because they just don't have the artillery. But they do take out a few of them, and they keep doing that throughout. And that platoon only has two casualties, doesn't it?
One, I suppose that's true.
One at the very beginning, right, the part we're talking about now, and one in the very end.
Yeah. Well, when you go on Wikipedia, you know, we've been talking about the battle for Westerplatte and the Russians invading Eastern Poland and God knows what else, where the casualties were in their tens of thousands, just thousands and thousands and thousands.
Mm.
And I think that maybe there were 15, 20 casualties on the Danish side. I mean, we're really talking about there were so few killed that it almost makes the ones that did die even a greater tragedy. Anyway, so one of the lads gets taken out and they have to leave him behind because they're being overrun, and they leg it with their bikes into a forest. And there's no plan anymore. This is all just, it's over before it even started. They know they can't compete. And they find a farmhouse, don't they? And they hide their bikes in a shed and they take cover in the house because they're basically expecting tanks to come right behind them.
Yeah.
The old lady who owns the farm is sort of cowering with them. And Second Lieutenant Sand says to her, listen, could you take that kid and get him cleaned up? Because the best friend of the guy who got killed is basically covered in his friend's blood.
Yeah.
And they're all just sitting there on the floor, sort of glancing out the window, and just they look absolutely shell-shocked, don't they?
Yeah, all of them, including their leader. This is and how he's expressed doing that is it by trying to stay calm. It's just these enormous deep breaths he's taking, like almost like he's having a panic attack. That whole sequence in the house is amazing. It's so tense.
But there's a
really wonderful interaction between the second lieutenant and the owner of the house. You know, she's pleased she's helped, you know, and but she does say, you know, basically saying what she thinks of the whole thing. It's just like 20 years ago, this was Germany. Now it's Denmark. To me, it doesn't really matter. And he basically says, paraphrasing again, obviously, he says, it does to me. And
it does to these boys, and this is their job. Because she's basically offered them the barn, the hayloft. She says, hide in the hayloft. No one's going to find you there. And there's a moment, there's a beat, isn't there, Simon, where he looks at her like, yeah, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. God, I'd make a terrible soldier.
You really would.
I'd be like, anything. It was just like, where's the hayloft? And it's just like, sorry, this is a block of flats. No, I need a hayloft. I need to hide.
Yeah. And you wouldn't blame them, really, after what they've been through. There's a lovely scene in this as well where we cut to the old lady in the farmhouse who's now cleaning up the kid. And this is the most baby-faced of all the kids.
Yeah.
And she's got a cloth and sort of bowl of water, and she's wiping the blood off his face and his hands. And it's like a mother with a little kid.
Yeah,
except,
it is.
You know, they're all in uniform and clutching their rifles. And you can see that she's thinking, this is insane. And she's saying, she's sort of cooing at him, isn't she? She's like, there's a good boy.
Yeah, there's sweet a good lad. Child, she says.
Yeah, and the kid's just in total shock because he's covered in his mate's gore.
He also doesn't say thanks, which is a bit rude.
Oh, you noticed that, did you?
Yeah, I'm one for politeness.
even in the most extreme circumstances. But what's really interesting is that Second Lieutenant Sand basically says to this old lady, no, we can't hide. We're the Danish army.
We're all there is.
This is it. And they wouldn't want to hide. So thank you, and we'll be off.
Yeah, off we pop. Isn't that when we see the Immaculate Woodpile?
You were very taken about the Immaculate Woodpile. As somebody who spends a lot of time in the woods making woodpiles, you were quite taken with Danish woodpiles, weren't you?
I have three gargantuan wood piles, which I'm very proud of, but they don't look as neat as that. I mean, I've read books about Scandinavians and their forestry work. As exciting as that sounds, it's actually very interesting. And that was a perfect wood pile, I must say. Very impressive.
You lead such an exciting life, Simon.
that wood pile is 5 out of 5. In fact, the next podcast that I'm going to start is basically just called The Woodpile Companion. Should we talk about World War II, Phil, or should we just continue talking about woodpile?
This is the amazing thing about watching these films with Simon, is some of the stuff he comes out with is absolutely just gold. I mean, the fact that we're watching a film about the fall of Denmark to the invading Nazis, and he's like, look at that woodpile. Hang on, rewind. That's amazing. How do they get their logs like that?
Is it birch? Lime? Oh, I couldn't tell.
It was Norwegian spruce, well, if you ask me, Simon.
It was so well cut. It's just no way of identifying it. Very, very, very impressed. Let's move on.
So we left Simon admiring the wood piles that are often through this film because there's a lot of woods. But that is basically, I mean, I hate to say it. We've decided, Simon and I, we're not going to do a literal blow-by-blow of every moment of every film we watch, because hopefully we'll be getting to films soon that everyone's watched and that will be a bit redundant. But also I think we spend too much time. But we follow this bicycle platoon as it's retreating. I mean, they don't really know where. They've got they know that their general is somewhere, and they go and meet him, and he's already packing up, and he's like, "I'm off." Lars Nicholson is—he's like, "I'm out," and he gives Second Lieutenant a box of fags, and he's like, "See you later, pal."
Yeah, and, crikey.
And they end up at a little village where the locals have basically put about three chairs and a table in the middle of the road to stop the Wehrmacht.
That's amazing. And this is when Dad cracked me up last night. There's this tarmac road, right? There's a tarmac road, and they've gone like, right, we've got to block the road. So it's like there's a bit of furniture, you know, what appears to be maybe a cardboard box, a bit of wood. No, and it's like, hold on a minute. First of all, I would have used the wood pile. Even so, right? So imagine a tank going towards that. First of all, it would just run over it. But secondly, they've left massive spaces either side. It actually looks it's like they're building a bonfire. And it's just like, well, they won't go on the grass, will they? They'll only go on the road. So don't worry. Yeah. Don't worry about the verges, the enormous verges that the tank and the armies will run over.
If you imagine a road going through a huge open field. With nothing but grass on every side. That's where they built their barricade. But here's the mad thing, Simon. Again, if you or our listeners want to go to the Wikipedia page, you put in German invasion of Denmark. This village did exist. Everything that happens in this film actually happened.
Right.
And the villagers did put up this little wooden barricade on the road. The really sad thing is, though, and we start to see this through the rest of the film, and if you look at the photographs on the Wikipedia page, every picture of the Danish soldiers trying to get, you know, a cannon set up or defensive lines, there's just hundreds of locals standing around going, oh, that's interesting. So when they get to this little village, they're all out having a bit of a party, aren't they? There's a kid selling milk. He's like, anyone want to buy some milk? And these kids on the bicycle platoon are looking at them like, you have no idea what's coming.
Yeah.
And what's coming comes around the corner and drives straight through.
And straight
through the wooden barricade.
Well, I mean, we're laughing at the moment because that bit is kind of crazy. But then the next bit's really horrible, really traumatic. A young kid gets killed.
So all the locals scarper and the soldiers are like, get out of the road, you maniacs. And a mother's trying to get her kid, who's the one that's been trying to sell them milk. And of course, he's running away up the road and gets hit in the back and goes down. And there's not even a fight. They don't even bother really trying to fight the soldiers there. They just, again, jump on their bicycles and hightail it. They don't. They finally abandon their bicycles. I've been saying to Simon, why are they even taking their bicycles? We see them struggling to get these bikes through these dense forests of immaculately kept forests. Why? They're not riding them. They're just sort of running with their bikes. So they finally dump them and find a truck, which they take and commandeer, and they head off and they go to a much larger town, don't they? Which, again, all happened. If you go on Wikipedia, this poor little bicycle platoon just kept up trying to put up rear guard defenses and just being overwhelmed and running away again. And they end up in this big town. And again, there's just locals standing around having a look. Oh, that's sort of interesting. Oh, he's got a big gun. No,
isn't that when? Isn't that the town where the flyers have been dropped from the German bombers?
Yeah, and they're all in Norwegian.
They're all in Norwegian. That's right.
The Danes are a bit put out by that. The Germans have been dropping propaganda flyers, basically saying you really should just give up. It's not worth it. But it's all in Norwegian, Again, this little town has...
I think it's Malienborg is the name of the town.
Yeah, it's possible. I don't know. I don't know Danish towns. But they're tasked... that this little what's left of this little bicycle platoon is given more ammo. There's a very funny recurring thing that goes on. The kid that we meet at the beginning who can't hit anything in the shooting practice, basically his mates say to him, look, you're crap at shooting. We've only got 40 rounds each. Give us the rounds and because we can hit stuff and you can't hit anything, and it's just a waste of bullets.
Yes.
And the sort of the hulky big lad goes, no, leave him alone. Everyone gets 40 rounds. That's what you get. We finally see them in the back of this truck, having just engaged with the Germans for a second time and been completely crushed. And this kid's handing out his ammo. He's like, no, take it.
Yeah.
I don't want it.
That's not Anderson, the hulky guy. That's Bran. Bran, who is half German, right? He's got a German father. And there's a bit of griping between Anderson and Bran throughout the film.
Yeah, the lads give him a bit of a hard time, don't they? But he's got a German dad.
But he does very well, doesn't he? And he's made second in command.
Yeah. And also because he can translate, which comes in handy.
Bloody does.
Towards the end of this film, because, again...
We're at the end, aren't we?
We put up a little resistance in this town. And this is the only bit that was a little formulaic, is when they're escaping in this truck they've commandeered, the big lad who's driving it, the second lieutenant says to him, you know, what are you going to do when all this is over? Which is, if you're in a war and somebody says to you, what are you going to do when all this is over? Just go, get lost. I'm not telling you because that's it.
Yeah.
I'll be dead in half an hour if I tell you that.
If I tell you my dreams, they're not going to come true for sure. And my life will end. That's generally what happens. And that's kind of what happens here.
He wants to be a grocer, well, doesn't he?
That's the tragedy, right?
And I mean, a nice girl.
He's just like, I want to have lots of kids. Understandable. Find a girl. Understandable. Be a greengrocer. I'm like, right. Okay. Not much of a dream, really. Do you know what I mean? But he wants the simple life. That's what he says. I want the simple life.
He wants a simple life.
And our commander, the second lieutenant, says, like, well, if you want a simple life, the army's right up your street. And it's like,
yeah, and they have a little giggle about it.
Yeah.
But they're overwhelmed in this town again. And again, it's a really exciting and tense combat sequence, because now we know what's coming as an audience. We've seen it, and they always lose. They keep getting overrun, and they're in this town, and you just know this is futile. Why are they still trying to do this? But our second lieutenant's bravely saying, you over on that corner, you in that doorway, and they're just overrun so quickly, and they keep pulling back and pulling back. And of course, the big fella who wants to be a greengrocer gets hit, and they drag him around the corner. And there's this great moment, sort of a bit Saving Private Ryan. If you remember the bit on the beach in Saving Private Ryan where everything kind of goes silent and slow motion, and Tom Hanks is just sitting in the surf, dazed, watching the carnage, and then he pulls himself together. There's a similar moment where Second Lieutenant Sand is, they're hiding behind a wall, and he's looking around, and all his soldiers are screaming at him, what do we do? What do we do? We've got no ammo. What do we do? And poor big, the Graham is lying on the floor dying. He's bleeding out, and they're trying to help him. And he just starts saying, it's over, it's over, it's over. And then he shouts to the kid with the German dad. He goes, how do you say?
That's Bran. Don't shoot. The one with the German dad is Bran, yeah.
Yeah. And he tells him, and there's this that I think is the best, because it's beautiful cinematography. Mm. The filming in this is just absolutely fabulous.
Yeah.
There's a shot where he comes around from behind the wall, and in down this narrow cobbled street are all these Germans pouring up. And the shot is sort of above his head with his hands like outstretched in desperation as he's screaming, don't shoot, don't shoot. It's an amazing shot.
Yeah, that's by Philippe Cress is the cinematographer.
It's an amazing job. And it's the color palette is really good, because the soldiers are in these very sort of quite vibrant khaki, aren't they? And so they stand out in these towns and these villages against the local population. And it sort of makes them look even more incongruous and even more out of place and even more overwhelmed.
Yeah, yeah.
In these massive helmets that they have.
Yeah. Bizarre helmets. Quite beautiful, but very, very
probably
odd.
Not much use. Yeah.
No, very odd.
So they've surrendered, and that's it. And they get marched out to a bus, and there's a German officer waiting for them. And Second Lieutenant Sand offers his pistol, and the German officer says, no, it's okay, you can keep that. and he looks a bit surprised. And this is with Graham translating. He says, why do you keep fighting? And neither of the soldiers knows what he's talking about. And he says, well, what do you mean? He said, well, I don't understand why you kept fighting when you'd surrendered hours ago.
Yeah.
And they go, what do you mean surrendered? And he goes, your prime minister surrendered 4 hours ago. And you see that sink in, that basically this last fight they've done where they've lost another guy, the guy who wanted to be a grocer. And it's so, what's powerful about that is that it really reinforces the futility of it all and the wastefulness of war, because unlike the sort of shocking mass death that we see in some war films that have a different effect, this is a very personal and intimate one. And especially when you realize that the country had surrendered hours earlier and all of this was pointless. And
the guilt on Michael Shannon meets Ray Liotta's face at that point, because he was, as far as he's concerned, he's responsible for those boys. And this chap has just died needlessly. But he didn't know, as far as he was concerned, he was following the correct orders.
And you can see, and he doesn't want to surrender. He wants to fight. It's his job, He's a proud man, and he wants to make a good account of himself. And this, the tragic moment of him, with bullets ricocheting everywhere, of looking at his men and realizing there's nothing he can do anymore. It's over.
Yeah.
Because he's such a brilliant actor, it's very sad. And they all get marched onto a coach, onto a little bus, and said, right, you can go back to your barracks now. Which is basically, in real life, what happened. They all just went to their barracks, took off the uniforms, and that was it. End of the war for them. But we have this moment of them all sitting on the bus as they're sort of, as they wend their way through Denmark, which is pretty much unchanged compared to most of the countries that had to.
But it's no longer theirs, right? That's the thing.
But it's no longer theirs.
And they're looking out at their motherland, and it's like how they're viewing home is now very, very different. Yeah. That's great, that bit. It's so good.
Yeah. And their lives are changed forever. And to reinforce that, rather than the film just ending there, we get a bit of a Band of Brothers thing where we then meet the still surviving soldiers of this platoon.
Yeah.
As old men, the real
That's
guys
really
supported
nice.
It.
It's really nicely done.
Who basically just say a couple of sentences about it. And
because it is Scandinavian, and I don't know whether it's because this is more to do with being Danish rather than Norwegian or Swedish, or whether it is just a Scandinavian thing, that bit at the end, unlike Band of Brothers, which I loved, by the way, I'm not coating it off. I'm certainly not coating off. And I like the end parts too, but they did get sentimental. They were always tear jerky. This being Scandinavian doesn't do any of that. It's just like, don't feel sorry for us. Do you know what I mean? And it's just like, they're very matter of fact about it. Some are very disappointed. But they're just upfront and honest about it. And it's just like, wow, fair play, And they didn't have
to
do that.
It's very powerful. One of them says that his dad told him afterwards, I'd rather you had died putting up some sort of a fight than not to have fought at all, which is, it's a powerful thing to have been told that by your own dad.
Yeah, it's a bit out of order.
Well, because they did give so much. It's just that there was nothing they could do in the face of this overwhelming military might. So we really highly recommend this. Simon, what are you going to give April 9th?
Well, out of all the films we've shown so far, it's probably my second favourite. My first favourite is still Vesterplatte. I think is a 4.5. It's not 5, it's 4.5. Mm.
We've not given a 5 yet, have we?
Yeah, Vesterplatte. I think we both
Did
gave
we give
it
a
5. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, and deserving. This film's up there for me between a 4.5 and a 5 easily. But with the next movie that we have planned, which I've already seen, and I'm so excited for Simon to see it because he just relentlessly took the piss out of it because it does have an absurd title. But I think is one of the best films I've seen. Ever,
ever,
and ever, mate.
Wow.
I love this film. And it is, nobody knows this film. So next episode of Foxhole Companion, get ready for, and I highly encourage you to get on Amazon Prime and find it, Commandos Attack at Dawn.
The worst title on earth.
It is the worst title. Oh, sorry, that's my bad, because we kept forgetting what it was, and what? Then we couldn't find it. Commandos Strike at Dawn.
Oh, of course. Of course they do. Starring Paul Mooney, the original Scarface.
This film's so good, Simon. I can't wait to watch it with you. Fab. I can't wait. Needless to say, there aren't many commandos. There's not a lot of striking at dawn until the very end.
Okay.
But it's a film about Norwegian resistance fighters, and it's amazing.
Fantastic. So that takes us on very nicely to the invasion of Norway then. I don't know if you were listening in the last episode. I'm not talking to you, Dan. I'm talking to other people. Hopefully you were listening.
I wasn't listening.
Oh, no, great. Amazing. That's just what I want to hear. I did say at the end of it, when you asked me what we're going to be doing, it was going to be The King's Choice. And that is a film about the invasion of Norway. We're not going to do that. As Dan just said,
we might do it as a bonus.
We'll
episode.
Do it as a bonus after Commando Strike at Dawn, because then that will nicely bookend the Scandinavian invasion.
Yeah, and then after that, ladies and gents,
dun, 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 Dunkirk.
We're into Dunkirk. There's a couple of films we'll be watching there.
Yeah,
the John Mills Dunkirk and the very recent Christopher Nolan Dunkirk.
Yeah,
we'll be after that straight into the Battle of Britain. It's hotting up now.
It is, for sure. It's getting exciting. Yeah,
we're getting it. We've come a long way since the Seventh Cross.
Oh yeah, a long way since Confessions of a Nazi Spy.
And the further we're away from Confessions of a Nazi Spy, the better, because that was dreadful.
That was
all right, ladies and gents. Yep. Listen, I'm pretty rubbish at this. But we're going to have a website up soon, I promise. And you're going to find on this website that has been painstakingly made by our friend Tony that we're going to put up pictures, stills from the film, maybe a couple of clips, a little bit of history, real life photographs from the time of these various conflicts. And we urge you to enjoy and have a look. But in the meantime, you can always find us on our Twitter page, Foxhole Companion, at Foxhole Companion 1. And please drop us a message. We like to hear from you. Let us know what you think of the episodes. Let us know what kind of merchandising you're looking for. We'll set that up.
And any recommendations?
Yeah, would be great as well. Any film?
Tell us what to watch instead of us telling you. Go like, no, stuff you. You should be watching this. And I go, all right, let's have a look.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I promise you, if I hadn't accidentally come across Commandos Strike at Dawn, that would have been a huge loss.
This better be good. After all this hype, I tell you.
So tune in next time when you listen to us on
The Foxhole Companion.